All right, welcome to this exclusive Inner Circle / TDM Tapes training. We're excited to do this one because this is a topic that is perhaps the quintessential idea that underpins where we see the Daily Magician going for the next however many months, years. It's a pretty big
centuries.
Moment.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's a pretty timeless principle, so.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's interesting because we've been talking about it for a long time. I mean, a long time. You guys don't really see it, obviously, on the front end. But it's been something that we've been really, I don't know, it's something that we've really cared about and been worrying about and been planning about. I mean, we have literally documents with 100 pages long just discussing what we're going to talk with you guys about today, because we find it, we want to be genuine. We don't want to be disingenuous, obviously. I mean, that's the point of being genuine. But we, it just matters to us what our brand stands for and what you guys are kind of getting by signing up for us. We don't want to just be like everyone else, and we really want to stand up for what we believe in.
And I think that's not to say that the brand as it is now is not a representation of us. I think there's a concept, it's funny because I'm actually doing already what we're going to be talking about in this training, but there's a concept in a book called the Lean Startup, where, and this is a pretty commonly accepted principle now, but at the time it was pretty revolutionary, and it was about something called the minimum viable product, which is where the whole idea is just don't spend like a year and, you know, $10,000 of advertising and marketing budget to build up this amazing kind of brand and hypothesis and products, and just kind of keeping it all in your room, like building up all this stuff. It takes like a couple of years, a load of money, and then you put it out in the world thinking I've made it perfect, it's amazing, I spent all my time on it, I ironed out every little problem with it, and now it's this amazing brand, it's so ready, and then you release it and it just, nothing happens, right? Nobody buys, you know, it's kind of a flop, it doesn't resonate with people, and you realize that whatever you base the brand on, the fundamental kind of aspect of it was flawed from the beginning, and you've wasted like how much time and how much money. Whereas the better way to approach that would just be, okay, here's the brand and the hypothesis. Rather than spend a year making it perfect, I'm just going to take like a little part of it, I'm just going to put it out there, I'm just going to see if my central kind of core thesis or hypothesis is going to stand on its own 2 feet. And if it is, then I'm going to test something new, and I'm going to add, and I'm going to build to it. But each time I'm going to iterate by releasing it to the market and getting that real time feedback. So that's kind of the approach we took with this was, our sort of core tenet was, well, we know we want to send daily emails, but we're not going to wait until, it's actually December right now, as of recording this, December 2020. And when we started this months ago, I don't know, it was like June, May, whatever. It's like, we could have said, oh, let's wait until December and get this core kind of idea perfect and then release and then start talking and sending these daily emails. But it's like, well, what's the point in doing that unless we first verify that people actually want daily emails from us? So that is what we've done. And now it's like, now that we've validated that, we can really expand where we want this to go, which is what this is all about. And sorry for the long-winded intro, but that is kind of the basis of how this came to be, why it's happening now. And all the context you never knew you needed.
Right. And it's interesting because I think it's Ken McCarthy, who's an internet marketing genius, talks about it. And he said a similar thing, which is like, but this is in reference to websites, which is just get it up, you know, as long as it does what you need, you know, it has the shop, it has the main point of your product or your company, just get the website up. If it's taking months and you're doing it wrong, you know, if it's taking weeks, even you might be doing it wrong.
And same with magic as well. Like,
yeah.
I'm aware that as of recording this, we recently did a podcast all about the skill of listening. So every time I interrupt, I suddenly feel like I've broken some commandment.
You've sinned.
Exactly. But just off the cuff, I was thinking it's similar with magic as well. Like some people, if you have an idea for a routine you want to try, you could sort of lock yourself in your room and think, all right, I'm not going to present this to anyone until it's perfect. Cause this is like a representation of me, man. It's like, this is me, you know, it's my art. I got to get it perfect. And so we spend so long working on each individual element, ironing out all the kinks in it and making it absolutely perfect. Then we go out and perform and realize that the core tenet of it is not a sound principle for basing the routine on.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I don't know, the idea of like a, like David Williamson's Rocky Raccoon routine, we all know now that that is a success, but it's not impossible to imagine that when he first started performing that, audiences weren't going to take to the idea of this furry kind of raccoon toy that he's using for his trick. You know, they paid money to watch a show and he's just messing around with this furry raccoon. It could have been that hypothesis was flawed. And so if David spent like 5 years working on this perfect, well, that's an exaggeration, but if he'd spent like a year working on this perfect stage show where everything was orchestrated, the music was timed to perfection, he had all the subtleties down, then he went out and performed and people just didn't like the raccoon, it would have invalidated all of that. But
right.
The opposite is also true. So he has this idea for a raccoon before he develops a stage show. Let's just see if people take to the idea and they find it fun. They enjoy it. Does it even fool them? Like, how do they like it? And it doesn't need to be a great routine for that. You sort of get the proof of concept of the first fundamental idea, and then you turn it into something. And so what we've just done for the first 5 minutes of this podcast, not podcast, sorry, exclusive audio training, not that there's much of a difference. Although to be fair, we can talk a little bit more freely in this one.
Right.
What we've just done in that first kind of 5-6 minutes is a real life example of what we are going to talk about in this training. And that was not planned. That was unintentional. And that's how sort of deep, not deep. I think that's why we're so happy with this direction, because that is right. Fundamentally that's us.
Kind of who we are.
When we don't even, exactly, like we don't even plan to do it and we end up doing it. So you can't really get more intrinsic than that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, shall we move into the big reveal? What is it we want to talk about?
Right. Well, I don't want to be a party pooper, but we should probably present first what this is, I guess, kind of like where this came from.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Just, you know, because without the context, it probably doesn't make as much sense. And so I wanted to pull this kind of two stories. And this is actually kind of the creation of the kind of story behind why we created the Inner Circle. But it also links into just our brand in general. And kind of to expand on that, the first point was really like, okay, and again, this is not to like flex on anyone, but like we bought unhealthy amounts of magic, right? We performed as a duo act, we've created our own magic and released it, we've helped produce and release magic products. Well, you have mostly, but I mean, we've both done it together, but you've helped a lot of people with a lot of magic products, you know, some of the big names. I guess this is back room, so you know, Chris Ramsey, you helped with the Stranger app. I mean, you can probably go on. You've helped with Asher. You've helped release a lot of magic products, right? And we've sold a lot of magic.
I mean, it's all a bit of a muchness at a certain point.
Right.
It's like, how many ways can you vanish a card?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And we've sold a lot of magic, not only to you as our listeners, but also while Benji was working in this, as much as it is backroom, we're going to leave. I think we may have said it before, but Benji's worked in a big magic club before with some big names, and he's helped a lot of people, well, helped them sell a lot of magic. We have an Instagram page. We know what it's like to run an Instagram magic page. We've had, we have a YouTube, we've run YouTube magic. Actually, my first YouTube magic page, I think I set up when I was 10, actually. I mean, I don't. Good luck to anyone trying to find it. But I started doing magic tutorials at the age of 10 on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So as far as that goes, I mean, and by that you can probably understand how old I am as well. We've also, I mean, we've helped manage online magic clubs, and we've interviewed some of the world's best magicians, and all of that. And we've written a lot. I mean, I think
it's kind of funny. I don't mean to interrupt every time. I'm getting nervous now, but sometimes like we've had the experience where we have a guest on the podcast and they say something and we want to kind of reference or cross-reference or look up what they've said or get the answer to a question. So maybe they say something like, oh yeah, where did we hear that quote? Or like, oh yeah, that's right. What's that book? Or like, what's that about? And then we Google it and we find our own site
right.
as like the top result. So like we are like answering ourselves from the past. And it's yeah. kind of
frustrating because it's weird. It's almost like you don't want your own answer to your question. You want someone else's answer.
Like if I knew, I'd be asking someone else. You know? Unless it's like a date or something where you've already written it down, but you just don't have it front of mind at the moment.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's funny because, again, not naming any names, but actually, yeah, it's just whatever. Jamie Swiss recently, like, you know, he's had that whole like celebration of how he's like written over like 100,000 words for Magic or whatever.
I think it was 500,000.
500,000. And
yeah, and to be fair, that might be.
That
I'm
is
not
a lot.
Honestly. Yeah, that is a lot. But I think that's just. Yeah, I think that's just his reviews as well. Although maybe that is everything. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But to be safe to him, I'll say that's maybe his reviews. Because he has written other stuff, obviously. But it's like a huge part of what he's wrote is reviews.
Right. And again, this is not to like put him down and put ourselves up because that's just like. Not fun. I don't think you should compare to anyone, but it's just funny because we're kind of like almost like sitting on the sideline, kind of like, well, where's our celebration? I guess I'm more like that. It's like we've written that many words about Magic. Like, can we get?
Honestly,
I'm
a little bit scared. Right, I'm kind of scared to add it up. Honestly, at this point.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Maybe we need more of a funeral than a celebration.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the point where you can. I think I can write about it in my sleep, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I did, really.
I honestly, do wake like, up thinking
in the
about
early
it in
days.
My sleep.
Yeah. And like in the early days of writing emails, like, I would literally be asleep and like, my subconscious would be like, and Alex Elmsley decided to do this. It's like,
right.
It's just, yeah. Anyway, we digress. No, we don't digress. This is all part of the point.
Yeah.
I forgot we were going somewhere with this.
All of this is
so,
to
anyway,
say,
mm-hmm.
Go on, Mitch. Take it away.
All of this is to say that not to boast or brag or flex, as I might say, but more just to contextualize and make sure it's very clear in your mind, listen to this, that we get Magic, right? Not saying that we get Magic as in the sort of artistic, ethereal, esoteric, like magic, we get Magic.
Right.
No, I mean, in terms of the commercial, like the actual industry of Magic, in the more physical sense, you know, as we're talking, the articles, the books, the videos, the products, the Instagram pages, the tricks, the release, just everything, right? And then obviously a fair bit about the ethereal side as well. But when I say Magic, I'm just saying we... almost like the Magic community, right? Just the physical Magic scene. We've seen this isn't a pun, but we've seen a lot of it. And after after everything we've seen, kind of it was a weird one, right? That we realized that there's kind of a little bit of a problem going on. But it's like a probably not the problem you might expect, and that's why I think it took so long to be able to verbalize it and clearly make the case for it, because I think most magicians on the surface wouldn't know that this is a problem. But the problem facing magicians right now is that they don't have any problems. And so again, it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but I mean, when you think about it, the state kind of the Magic scene today is the sort of least problem fueled it's ever been. You can go on Magic streaming sites and it's pennies to get hundreds of hours of Magic content straight to your fingers. Even YouTube, you know, that's free, right? And there's so much on there that I don't even think I could watch it if I wanted to. The books, you can Amazon or, you know, Vanishing Penguin, these sites that do very fast delivery to anything you want, just order it, bam, it's yours. No need to kind of hunt down this guy who refers you to this guy who interviews you, then refers you to this guy. It's like, nah, you want the book, you got it. Magic clubs, again, it's not, there's no sort of, there's not the same sort of barrier to entry, I think, for a lot of them. It's pay to play. Like, if you want to get in, just pay, you're in. And what else we got? We got, like other magicians, some of the best magicians in the world. In the past, you would have to go and kind of seek them out to study their performances. But now I've got archives of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of Magic, just on YouTube, Instagram.
Right.
It's almost trivial how easy it is to watch these performances. Magic lectures, you know, if you buy online lectures, you can rewatch them as many times as you want, but you pay once. Whereas in the past, it's like you have to go, you have to really make the most of it right there. It's kind of hard. And obviously online communities, Facebook, Reddit, magicians just kind of hanging out one of another, kind of telling each other what they want to hear. And so on the surface, it's this really nice kind of like, wow, it seems like everything is kind of hunky-dory. But that in itself is the problem. Because, and by the way, interrupt me if you have any points to add or if I'm missing anything, but I think that the core of it is that having no problems is a problem. Because when you don't, to grow, right, to progress, to evolve, you need problems, you need adversity, you need obstacles to overcome in order to fuel the growth and innovation. So when you don't have problems, you don't have challenges, you don't have adversity, you don't grow. And so the dilemma that magicians, even if they don't know it, as a whole are in right now, is that because life as a magician is easier now, it's easier to become a magician. All these magic related activities are easier than they've ever been. There's no reason for us to evolve and innovate and grow.
And
which,
think,
yeah, exactly. Go on.
And I think even more than that, like, it's like they don't want to. Like, it's almost like this attitude of,
right, because nobody wants problems, yeah. But after you have them, you kind of, it's like you don't want the problem, but you evolve by overcoming it. And after, you're glad for the process. But if you have the choice, most people aren't going to ask for the problem. And so when we're in this situation now where we don't have these problems, you know, nobody's going to challenge the status quo, because it's like, well, we're happy, like, we don't have problems. Well, yeah, that's true, but you also don't have evolution, you don't have growth.
Right, and I think that really is the crux of the problem, I think, is that this problem is, you know, it's fine if all this stuff was accessible, but the issue is that people are kind of just happy to leave it where it is, right? It's like, well, magic is like, it's almost like the idea of creating new magic is like just fading into non-existence. Like, this idea of like innovating and creating your own routines is almost becoming like non-existent. And actually the attitude is to attack people that want to create their own things, and attack people that want to innovate, and attack people that have new ideas, and basically tell them, you know, Marlowe's done everything, which he has done a lot of stuff, but then don't get me wrong, Marlowe has thought of a lot of stuff, but you know, there's infinite possibilities within magic. And I think that the real, for me, the problem there is, you know, you feel intimidated, and almost like it's a taboo to actually talk about your own creations and talk about the magic creation process. And
or people, even the fact that you want to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really sad. And I think that kind of laxness and again, like, yeah, like, no one wants to think, oh, well, maybe like the way to get better at magic is not just watching all this stuff. It's actually having to like sit down and think and create my own stuff. You know, it's harder to do that. Definitely. It's easier to, it's, you know, and it's the harder road, but I think it is really important. And like you said, like, and it's a line that, you probably saw in the email that we sent out, you know, what happens to animals when they get fat and lazy? Like, they get devoured. Right? And it seems like we're right on that precipice of kind of falling into just this routine of just repeating the same magic and never moving anywhere. And this is not a label on everyone, so I don't want you to get offended, but if you're listening to this. But at the same time, it is the vast majority of magicians, I would say. Or at least a very vocal and powerful minority, which has pushed this dogma on the magic community in general.
I guess part of the, I don't know, part of the difficulty of it is that nobody likes to admit a problem when the problem's pleasurable. And so if you're 8 years old and there's a cookie jar and your mum's gone out to, I don't know, yoga class and the cookie jar's open and there's no one there to tell you that eating too many cookies is bad for you, you don't realize you have a problem because as far as you can tell, it's entirely pleasurable and you're just eating cookie after cookie. But like Jacob said, you're getting fat, you're getting lazy, you're going to get devoured. And so it's a little bit of a difficult one because nobody wants to hear that they're the person with their hand in the cookie jar. But if you can sort of have the guts, I guess, to confront that, the potential we can unlock on the other side is exponential. And so I guess maybe that's a good part to start moving into this. We don't want this entire thing to be negative. Mm-hmm. Because we want, like at the end of the day, we want the innovation, we want magicians as a whole to grow, and we want to make progress, you know, macro and micro. So within your individual strategies, routines, ideas, the way you approach magic, and as a macro community, the collective. And we have a very interesting method, I think, for this. And this is kind of our core way of approaching magic. And approaching anything, really, but especially magic. Right. And this is the reason that we've been able to achieve everything we have achieved. And that's not to say it takes any kind of special skill. It's more just that you haven't been exposed to this yet. And once you can, it's like, it's powerful. And so the number one method that we use to overcome this problem and not get stagnated individually and hopefully collectively is becoming and getting good at thinking differently.
Yeah. And so let's ponder on that for a second, you know, like what does that mean? Like, I mean, that's quite the abstract phrase, actually, if you really break it down, you know, what does it actually mean to think differently? And I think it's emphasized, pretty well. It's something that we've talked about. This is just a small example, but it's something that we've talked about with quite a lot of magicians that we've had on the podcast, where it's something that you've said a lot, which is, you know, there's a lot of magicians that read magic theory books, right? I mean, it makes sense. There's a lot of magicians that read about magic that are absorbed in the magic world, but there's not so many magicians that read books about theater, or like how to present good theater, how to engage an audience in a theater, like almost even like, you know, we've talked about, here's a bunch of examples, right? You know, business, writing, email marketing, filmmaking. This is all the stuff that we digest regularly. Different languages. We speak French and Spanish, philosophy. We've done SEO work, for anyone who knows what that is, investing, coding, deep. We talked about the principle of deep work, productivity, copywriting, charity, books, just life in general, like religion, purpose, like all of those things, for some reason.
Which, by the way, if you notice, none of them were magic.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. That's the point, right? None of those things have any connection to magic, but why not? You know, why should they not help us with our magic, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's almost like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an industry that's like really well blended. Like, I don't know. For instance, like in a government, you wouldn't have economics without education, or you shouldn't, you know? It's like, oh, well, the government is just for this, you know? Why would you... The whole point of the government is it's supposed to manage, like, the country, right? In every aspect. Or not every aspect, but at least the most important ones, right? And it's kind of like, why would you have a government that only works on economics? It's not going to work, right? It needs to look outside, right? And maybe economics and schooling need to come together, because maybe funding is needed for schooling or whatever. Anyway, I'm not trying to push on a political agenda right now. This is just an example. But what I'm saying is it's very simple when you think about it like that. It's not like, can you imagine the outrage if they were like, okay, we are no longer doing anything government. We're not going to help with anything. Military's gone. All we do is economics, you know? Can you imagine the outrage? Like, can you imagine how quickly a country would go to like go to crap, for use of a better phrase. Like, it's a very simple thing that we have ingrained in us as a society, right? Now, depending on where you live, I mean, you know, there's different ways, but everywhere, I think you have to handle those issues. It's such a simple concept, and it's interesting because we spoke to Danny about it, and he's like, "Yeah, I hope he doesn't mind us saying this, but I'm sure he won't, because I think we're going to have him come on and speak about this exact point." But it seems like magicians struggle to see outside of this magic box, right? They trap themselves in this world of magic theory, and it really leads to a lack of innovation, because if all you're reading is Marlowe, right? And again, Marlowe, like, amazing, amazing magician. I mean, changed like magic, right? Like, very intelligent guy. But if all you're reading is Marlowe, all you're going to create is Marlowe type stuff. And that's just like the truth of it, right? Like,
or are you going to improve on what's already there? You know,
right, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, for instance, obviously you're never going to speak another language if all you read is English, right? Like, mm-hmm. Obviously, like, that's just a basic concept. But
then what's fascinating is when you go and you do study another language, your understanding of English,
right, of your own language,
because you learn, like, wait, how languages work.
This tense is in English, you know, like that. I definitely felt
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't even know what a conditional tense is until you learn
right.
a conditional tense, or like the subjunctive. Like, you don't. You're like, yeah. What's a subjunctive? But you use them without knowing that you know instinctively how to use them. But then when you go and study, you know, French or Spanish, you learn a little bit better how English works.
Right. Definitely.
And again, it's just an example.
Yeah, and I think that's a great example, and I think it's something that is strangely neglected in magic. And it's interesting what Danny said. He said maybe it's because...
I think it's partly...
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you say a point, I just really don't want to forget mine, because I haven't wrote this down. Maybe I'll write it down while you're talking.
All right. All I was going to say is, just really quickly, Danny said something which is basically like, maybe because we're such methodical thinkers in magic, and it can mm-hmm. sometimes be quite mathematical and kind of just, you know, this step, then this step, then this step, and mm-hmm. voila, you have a magic trick, right? Mm-hmm. That is perhaps the reason that we get trapped in this cycle of kind of not thinking outside the box. Yeah, that's all I want to say. Please do expand mm-hmm. upon that.
Well, Danny is interesting, though, because I remember he really blew our mind one time. We were on a call with him. It wasn't a recorded one, but we were just chatting, and he was telling us about this vanish he'd come up with, and the inspiration for the vanish had been, he was like... I can't remember where he was. Maybe it was outside somewhere, and
in a forest.
Watched a leaf or a forest, right? Although maybe it wasn't.
Actually, anyway, he was watching the leaves fall.
It went down a drain. Yeah, so I'm thinking a drain in the forest. It's probably
must be like a sidewalk or something somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, he sees this leaf come falling down. He's just watching it, kind of like drift slowly down, and then it rests on the gutter, and then he's looking, and 1 minute's there, and the next it's gone, and he's observing nature, and suddenly he has the method for his next coin vanish. But he didn't learn that by reading Bobo. He learned that by watching nature and watching how nature moved and applying that. Because if it worked for the leaf and the gutter, it's going to work for a coin in his hand. Because the two things, on a micro level, they're different. But the more macro you get, the more similar certain situations are exposed to be. And this is one of the... an idea that I first really was... my mind was expanded by, I guess, by a guy called Ray Dalio. You probably heard of him. I don't know. I don't know how many people hear of these kind of things, but he's a huge billionaire hedge fund manager. You know, he's up there with Warren Buffett as, you know, one of the best investors of all time. You know, if Warren Buffett didn't have such a firm grasp on the title, it would probably be Ray Dalio that all those YouTube clickbait videos like, invest like Warren Buffett, do this. It would be Ray Dalio's name instead. So Ray Dalio is super, super famous in the world of investing. He had a book called Principles, and he talks about how the more you kind of... I have a quote from it. Yeah, so if you... He's talking about the painful process of evolution, and he talks about the same stuff we've been talking about, which is where, you know, if you want to grow, obviously you need problems. And so as you push through this painful process of personal evolution, you'll ascend to higher and higher levels, and as you climb above the blizzard of things that surrounds you, you realize they seem bigger than they really were when you see them up close. So most things in life are just, as he says, another one of those. The higher you ascend, the further out you get, the better you get at dealing with each situation as just another one of those. And you see how this problem in magic is the same as this problem in economics. Or the way that leaf goes through the gutter there is the same as the way you want to make the coin vanish from your hand. And so Ray Dalio, a huge, huge influence on this. The other guy, J. Abraham, we talked about before, but one of his, really his greatest asset is that he, as a business and marketing consultant, has been exposed to about 465 different industries. And he realized that people in industry A, all the individual firms and companies competing within industry A, only ever try and outdo each other based on the sort of accepted practices for that industry. And so when a company comes along and starts and investigates, oh, let's go and see what industry B, C, and D are doing. Oh, industry D have this cool thing where they do this strategy. Let's try that for industry A. Because everybody else in industry A is just doing the same stuff of each other. The only way they can beat the competition is by linear improvement, incremental. You know, if you're doing the same thing as everyone else, you're going to get the same results as everyone else, plus or minus, you know, 10 points. And so you can only increase incrementally on that. When you borrow those strategies from a different industry or a different way of thinking, because it's so alien and foreign to all these other companies, you have zero competition and you can do stuff that they can't even imagine, and the growth can become exponential. And so J. Abraham, Ray Dalio, two people I would definitely recommend looking up and reading their work. Because in essence, that is part of what we're recommending is study people who aren't magicians. And these are the first two, I would say, because they will teach you how to do that study. So it's kind of getting kind of meta, but
yeah.
I think
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your point.
I was going to say the point that came up to in my head like 5, maybe 10 minutes ago when you were talking, I said I'd hold and say it. A lot of the reason I think people aren't, as magicians, they're so locked inside what they know and sort of this magic, like, you know, magic is just a thing, right? It's just it's a self-contained thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so most magicians are only ever branch out within magic. So if you imagine like a circle, maybe they start in the middle of the circle. It feels like they travel because they move from the center to the left, but they're still inside the circle. And so most magicians only seek out material within inside the magic. And so they'll read magic books and magic theory and study magicians, which is fine. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. But part of the lack of interest, I think, in studying the non-magic stuff is this sort of implicit assumption that because we're so used in magic to the idea of secrets, right? Like you buy this book, so it's got a secret. Or that this method, you know, it's an effect and a method, and there's a secret to it. And if you learn secrets, you're going to get better. And so when you go out to buy these kind of mass market books, it's like, oh, but they're not, you know, it's not secrets. It's not like you don't see the effect, and so you don't realize that what they're telling you is kind of a secret. Because in magic, it's so obvious, right? You read the book, and it says, like, you make four cards, turn over one by one. Then you read the method. Actually, most books are giving you the method. You just don't know what the effect is yet, and so it's less attractive. Whereas in magic, it's kind of easier to visualize, and you have that motivation to read the book because you know what the effect is, and it spells it out, and you can really see that cause and effect, and you see, oh, that's what the effect looks like. Great, let's read the method. And so you just keep on reading magic methods. What you don't realize is all these other books are doing the same thing. But you don't know, you have to decide for yourself what the effect is, or figure out for yourself what the effect is, because they all have an effect, and a pretty amazing effect, but it's not like it's on the blurb. It's not like using the secrets of this book, you'll be able to make cards do this, or do this, do this. No, they just give you the method. You have to figure out how that method can translate into an effect, but it's no less powerful of a method. It's maybe even more powerful of a method because nobody else in magic is doing it. And so I think that's part of the reason why the idea of studying outside of magic is not natural, because it's like, well, where's the secret in that? Everybody knows that. How's that going to help me with my secrets? Well, it is a secret. You just have to, you start with the method and you read the books and you get the method, and then it translates into effect. And you realize it's kind of like, you know, even when people do read the methods, it doesn't mean they know it, you know? And so we're on the verge of getting into dangerous abstract territory here, but we kind of have to, because we're dealing with a topic where it is like that a bit, and we have to just do our best to press forward through it. But I hope it's making sense so far.
Yeah. I think to come back to the beginning of kind of what I was saying way back half an hour ago, about the kind of two things that's inspired us and what we want to do moving forward. So we talked about our background in magic, and we talked about how that what that created in our minds, and this kind of new thinking that we want to push forward. And so we've really discussed it in length, and we've tried to come up with a way that we could think that we could actually make this happen, right? Actually make this kind of revolution in magic happen, allow innovation to seep back through every magician, you know, allow people to create their own effects, create this space where people are, you know, rather than wrecking other people's ideas.
Well, I think also it's partly more, it doesn't have to be specific. That's one application of it. But the wider, like, general thing is just to introduce obstacles and problems back into magic, because it's like in the process of exposing yourself to these new ideas and studying outside of magic and just studying everything. Like, the reason we're not giving you specific examples, although we will and we can, is because everything applies. Study anything and you can find ways to apply it. And so, but in the process of moving outside of magic and then studying outside of magic, that in itself then becomes the challenge. That becomes the problem, because it's not easy at first. It's new. You're used to magic. You're used to the easiness of what everything we have available to us, as we discussed earlier. And so by doing this, you kind of move outside of your comfort zone, and that in itself is kind of challenging. It's a problem. But the beauty of it is that's exactly what we want, because then you can grow. You know, suddenly it's this problem of, okay, well, how do I translate these ideas from this industry or this idea into magic? And that is your problem right there. And so when you overcome that, you grow, right? And then if you imagine there's almost infinite different industries or hobbies or ideas or sectors of education that you could move into and do this, think about how much potential for growth there is if each one of those is an opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm. And I think I can't remember quite what I was saying, but I was just gonna say kind of the second event that and kind of like, you know, if everything we're saying is kind of like speaking to you and you're feeling like, oh yeah, like that's something I want to do. We talked about it quite a lot at length, and we decided that, you know, we really wanted to make the inner circle of the Daily Magician the center of this new innovation. Just, you know, because it's important to us that we don't just kind of like speak and use words, but also like act. And so we really want to, and it's important to us to create this group of innovators, right? Of people that are like-minded and who want to press forward. And that's why, and the story that kind of relates to this is a while ago, I guess a year ago, actually, probably like almost exactly a year ago, me and Benji were in New York, and we actually were able to meet Darren Brown. And so when I say that, it's not like a he gave us like behind the stage tickets. We just waited around and wanted to have a chat with him. Basically, we were waiting outside, right? And I'll set the scene. It was freezing cold. We were waiting outside the theater. It was New York winter, which is pretty brutal. And we really wanted to have a chat with Dan Brown, right? And so it's funny, outside of his like stage wear, he was pretty like, it was pretty hard to tell who he was, right? And he actually walked like right past us, was about to get in the car. And then he stopped and he's like, oh, are you guys like waiting to like talk to me? And we were like, yeah, actually. And he's like, oh, look, how are you doing? Like, anyway, we had like a discussion, we were able to speak to him. And it was kind of that moment of like him going outside of his comfort zone and like speaking to us, which like made us think like, you know what, I think people really appreciate that one-on-one connection. And so obviously like in our daily emails from now on, we're going to be trying to like bring these ideas from different places and bring more problems, bring challenges to you as our subscribers. But also within the inner circle, we want to go even deeper and give you that personal connection with us and kind of try and create this group of innovators going forward.
That's a nice, yeah, it's a good way to put it. And I think about innovation. That really links all this together, because we've been talking about a whole bunch of different topics, just, you know, thinking differently, J. Abraham Reid-Dalio, innovation model. innovation comes, not always, but a lot of the time, innovation comes from unexpected sources. And especially, it often comes from outside of the industry that you're in at the moment. So J. Abraham, two of his favorite examples of that are FedEx. Everybody knows FedEx. You know, if you when you absolutely need to get it delivered by tomorrow, you know, guaranteed is FedEx. But the way they developed and innovated that model, because you can bet it was new at the time, and that's how they were able to capture so much of the market, because it was such a new and innovative principle. They didn't come up with that by reading about postal theory, you know, and like, okay, let's go back over the archives of how every kind of post office ever has worked. Instead, they looked at what the banking system used as their method for clearing checks overnight. And it's like this kind of hub and spoke model where it gets formed to this central and then branches out from that. It's like a hub and spoke thing. They were able to then take that and say, why don't we just take this concept from banking? It's never been done in post, but it's a very similar thing. Let's apply it to the post, and bam, you've got FedEx. You've got this huge company it has a day-to-day impact on our lives today, just because they were able to innovate by thinking outward and bringing concepts from outside of the industry into the industry. The other one, of course, is the ballpoint pen. The roll-on deodorant. There was a guy, George Thomas, who wanted to figure out a better way to apply deodorant. And he was kind of drawing a blank for how to do that. And then he realized the answer was right in his hand all along. And the same technology that's used on a pen can be used for a roll-on deodorant. But what he didn't do was like look up in the dictionary deodorant going back like 100 years. How has everyone already done it? Because sort of by nature, if you want to do something new,
it's kind of... to me, because I don't have deodorant going back 100 years.
Right. It's a pretty specialized dictionary. But like, if you want to figure out something new, it's kind of hard to figure out something new by looking up something old, you know, what's already been done. It's definitely useful. You need that platform. You need that basis. And I'm not saying every idea has to be new. Like, for example, in the inner circle, some of the effects I'll give to you, I'll be like, well, you know, fair enough. This is an idea that I saw Marlo talks about. And, well, here's a variation on it. It's not new, but it's pretty good. So you're not going to, you know, it's not going to hurt your day to have this, and you'll have a lot of fun with it. But we try as often as we can to bring concepts from outside of magic, especially in these audio trainings we do and in individual effects. I remember in the skyscraper method, if you have that, you might not. If you do, you should get it because it's pretty good. In one of the modules, we have a little lesson on pivoting, right? Which
That's
is a concept
exactly
I think.
Talk about.
Oh, nice. We're on the same wavelength. Is an example of borrowing a concept from a different, entirely different industry and applying it to memorize deck magic with great results. And just to be fast, pivot. Richard started this little audio training by talking about the Lean Startup, the book. And this comes also from the Lean Startup, where we talk about the minimum viable product. So we have like a, I can't remember what the example was that we were using at the time, but we have, we have some product. And we put it out in its initial form just to test the concept, see if it works. Then, based on the feedback we see, we pivot. Or based on something unexpected that happens, we realize the product that we've already come up with can actually be applied to this segment of the market. Or if with a little tweaking, we can make it adapt to this. And so the idea of pivoting is that you're on one path with one plan, but with your eyes open to different possibilities that might come up, so that at any moment you can switch and do something different that will be more powerful and profitable. For the business based on the environment around it. And so the idea of pivoting then with the memorized deck came, well, hang on. We have a very similar situation in where we have a trick, right? We have a trick we want to do. But the memorized deck has so many possibilities that as long as we keep our eyes open to all the possibilities that are arising around us, and, you know, people's names, their ages, words they say, facts that come up in conversation, callbacks to other tricks, the time on their watch, if you keep your eyes open to the environment and the surroundings, at any point you can pivot your effect based on those situations. And so we didn't come up with that idea by thinking about the memorized deck. We came up with that idea by thinking about business and thinking, oh, you know, that's an interesting strategy. We can apply that to magic. And the same, actually, we then went another layer. We took it another layer where we took that idea of pivoting and then applied it to a concept from American football, just to make this very fast. I don't actually know that I'm English, so I'm not the expert in American football. But as far as I know, there's a running back, right? That's the guy that runs the ball.
Just because I live in America doesn't make me an expert.
Right.
But I'm sure they'll understand. I'm sorry to everyone that's been like super offended because you've grown up with football in your life.
I mean, I think if the magic bit didn't offend them, hopefully they shouldn't.
Right.
The idea, right, of a running back is, okay, you get the ball. The other team has a line of defense. When you get the ball, it is your kind of obligation to run at that defense. So most of the time, that defense is going to stop you. Most of the time, there's not going to be a gap. There's not going to be an opportunity. That doesn't mean you're not going to run when you get the ball. You know, if you get handed the ball, you have that professional obligation to make a run and see if there is a break and if there's a gap you can get through. And obviously, this concept is used in football. And then, funnily enough, I saw it being transferred by, maybe it was a business guy, I can't remember his name, can't remember who it was then talking about that with business, where you got to keep on running at the opportunity, because maybe it won't line up this time, but if you keep on running at it, when it does open up, you'll be ready. And so already it had been transferred from one kind of industry to another. And then I looked at it and thought, well, hang on, we've just been talking about pivoting, which is the idea of that you have to keep your mind open to any situation that might come up, words that you might be given, so that your trick or your routines that you're doing, based on the environment, you can switch and you can pivot. You can do something far more powerful based on the immediate circumstance. And it's going to be more impromptu, more off the cuff, feel like it's impossible. You know, I only just said that, or you didn't even know my age until now, and that kind of thing. But in order to pivot, you need to make a run for it almost in your mind, where somebody calls out a word, or somebody tells you their age, somebody tells you their name, or you discover a fact about somebody. You see the time on the watch, the lock screen on their phone, the passcode they use. You're keeping your mind open and searching for that stuff. When you receive an input of information like that, it's like you're a running back receiving the ball, and now you've got to make a run for it. And in your head, you've got to see, okay, does that line up? Do I have a way that I can use that with maybe the card they've picked, a previous trick? Can I call back a named card? Is there any way I can combine this? You have to make that run in your head. Most of the time, no, probably not. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't make the run, because occasionally there will be a lineup. Oh, you know, that passcode they just entered happens to take me from the first named card to a card that had been named in a previous trick, you know, when I add the digits. And so as long as you make the run every time, sooner or later, there's going to be a gap in the defense, and it's going to be a breakthrough. And so you're going to be able to push through, and this amazing effect is going to happen, where it's going to seem totally impossible. How could it happen? There was no way you could have known, no way you could have prepared, but it turns out that you didn't do anything funny, and bam, you know. And so the whole thing, the whole way we kind of constructed that theory, none of that was done by reading magic books. We had to read magic books to understand how the memorized deck worked, obviously. But once you know how the memorized deck worked, suddenly we were like, well, okay, well, you know, pivoting business, that's interesting. How can we apply that to the memorized deck? American football, how can we apply that to the pivoting? So we've just added a crossover on top of a crossover. And it's just fascinating, man. Like, even talking about it, I'm getting excited. So,
No, I'm just saying, yeah, it is exciting. it's fun, and it, I think that's really what it is as well. It's just fun. Like, I mean, for instance, like, to take it like very like magic-y, like maybe like a way that we did this was like, for instance, like we took sponge balls and like, so this is like, this is an interesting thing. Like, right, sponge balls is kind of outside of memorized deck magic, right? This is a way to think about it inside magic, right? And we said, how can we apply sponge balls to the memorized deck, right? And that's taking almost like a different industry and applying it.
Yeah. You can go even meta within magic, like one genre of magic to another genre, or one style of magic to another. You know, memorized deck to sponge ball, Rubik's cube to sponge ball, Rubik's cube to magic. It's micro and macro. It's amazing.
Right, exactly. And so going forward, we really encourage you, if you're not already in the inner circle, there's going to be a few changes, right, coming forward. Maybe we're not going to talk about them in detail here, but there's going to be a few changes that we're going to make to the inner circle. Not to worry anyone that is an inner circle member, like nothing will change for you. But we definitely have a lot of vision for how this is going to work going forward. And definitely you'll see it in our daily emails. You'll see that there's going to be a big change in, or at least not a big change, but we're going to be actively trying to incorporate this concept into all the content that we give you. And so we encourage you to just kind of take this concept and just think about it for a while. And think about things that are around you, you know, because a lot of you that are listening are probably not full-time professional magicians, right? You have probably a day job. Maybe you don't, and props to you if you're a full-time magician. And props to you if you're not. But I think you know, just think about what you do at work and think about the things that you do every day. And maybe that's something that you can do. Or think about your interactions with your family or whatever it might be. Think about a hobby that you have, you know, and think about maybe how you can apply that differently to magic or maybe to a different aspect of your life. You know, maybe you can streamline something else. And so...
Well, that's the beauty of it as well. Is then you can also... Look, is there any interest in insights you have from magic that now you can apply to your day job? Or it's a two-way process as well, is the thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I think we're going to... Unless you have anything else to say, Benji.
Yeah, I mean, final kind of takeaway points, because I want to give people... I think we have given people practical stuff, but I want to give them a kind of like a practical exercise, okay? And this was inspired by J. Abraham himself, who we've been talking about. And he often recounts how in his early seminars that people would pay, you know, 25, 30 grand, and this was in the 80s, to listen to him speak. One of the exercises he'd have them do is he'd get everyone in the conference, there'd be a lot of people, and he'd take them to a bookstore, and he'd ask people, okay, so what's your hobby? And maybe their hobby is like fly fishing. And then he'd go to them, okay, and pulls out a book on like cake decorating and gives it to them. Maybe the next guy's hobby is marketing. Pulls out a book on running, or an article on running, a magazine on running, and give it to them. And he makes everybody go back to their hotel room and read at least two chapters or two articles of the book. And then come back to the group, and it will split them off into kind of splinter groups. And they can each tell each other insights that they got from the book they read that was totally the opposite of whatever they were into, that gave them insight and improvement and ideas they can apply to the hobby that they are into. And then he would get a spokesperson for each individual group to talk and relay that to the whole group. And it was amazingly beneficial and everybody gained a lot. So even doing that exercise, I think, is a good start. Just grab a book from your shelf that has nothing to do with magic. Like, for example, I have a book here, The Personal MBA by Josh Kaufman. This is not prepared. Let me just flick to a random page, because this is what you do. Just flick to a random page or a random chapter. It's up to you. And so here, he's talking about accumulation. Okay, so he says, at this very moment, a Toyota engineer somewhere in the world is making a very small change to the Toyota production system, one of the most efficient manufacturing systems in the world. Alone, the change may not look like much. A small tweak, a slight restructure, a bit of material or effort saved. Taken together, however, the effects are huge. Toyota employees implement over 1 million improvements to the Toyota production system every year. It's little wonder that Toyota is now the world's largest and most valuable automotive manufacturer. Small, helpful behaviors tend to accumulate over time, producing huge results. Anyway, I could go on. That's a tiny little paragraph from it. But already, I'm thinking, well, okay, that's interesting. So you're telling me I don't have to improve my sleight of hand by 100% each week, but if I just tweak this, right, I get my pinky count a little bit more silent today. Or, you know, tomorrow, I work on getting that sound when I'm doing the arms account. I don't make everything better, but you just do the little things in the routines and the structure. It doesn't have to be slides. And then over time, that compound effect and accumulation of doing each individual little improvement is going to have a huge impact on your overall routines. Or if it's your script, you know, working on improving just that one line today. But tomorrow, just one other line. And a cumulative result is amazing. But anyway, that's just like 20 seconds, right? I just picked a book, read around a bit.
I think you can even make it deeper than that. You can even think of a whole routine around that quote, right? You could be like, okay, so like over the course of this routine, like all I want to do is like improve by like a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. You'd be like, okay, you know, you can think of like a whole like pattern that could go with that, right? Mm-hmm. And it'd be like, okay, like, but by the end, like, I promise, like,
First of all, I'm going to make the first card vanish, and then the second, and then by the end, it's like the whole deck, you know, there's like a 52 cards that vanish in front of them. Like, you know, I started out by learning how to make little pieces of paper vanish. You do some coin retention vanish. Yeah. And then I learned how to make a card vanish, make a card, and then a fan of cards vanish. And then, well, some kicker, you get the whole deck to vanish. It's about accumulation. So, yeah, it doesn't even have to be methodical or system stuff. It could be effects and presentations and whatever you want, anything you get out of it. That's the point, you know. And so that is an exercise that I'll leave you with. We will also be helping you do this, I think, via the daily emails. We'll be talking about concepts and ideas that we learn, books that we read in on the daily, on the podcast that we put out as well, the podcast we put out with the guests and with us. We'll be talking about concepts that we find interesting. Doesn't have to be about magic, but in almost every, I would say probably 100% of the time, they will relate to magic in some sense. And that will give you another kind of example and implementation, which should help you then do that yourself. So those are the obviously, if you're not in the inner circle as well, you may have had the opportunity by now. As Jacob said, we've been making some changes. So as of this speaking right now, I can't guarantee all this information will be accurate. But if you email us at benji@thedailymagician.com or jacob@thedailymagician.com, we might be able to get you set up with an Inner Circle account, or at least the opportunity to get one and join us in that. But I think, I think that's enough for now. We've gone over a lot of heavy topics in this podcast or training.
Okay. Well, I think it was it's been a pleasure talking about this. We hope this training was of some use to you. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this. In fact, that's the whole point. The whole point is that going forward, we're going to talk about this a lot. We hope you enjoyed this training. And obviously, I think I'm going to put a little attachment on this file that just says, like, listen to this first, as far as like the Danny, as far as the Daily Magician tapes go. If you're listening to this right now,
and I think Jacob's
probably got the rest of the tapes.
Internet is going a little weird.
They're really interesting.
You won't be able to hear him right now. Okay, he's back.
Oh,
you're back. Okay. The internet went.
Were you talking that whole time?
No, I mean, I just was saying, I think Jacob's internet is gone.
Oh, okay. I'm probably, whatever. Anyway, I'll cut Benji's audio and you'll just heard mine. Because I'm pretty sure mine recorded. All I was just saying is I'm probably going to put a note on this file that says listen to this one first as soon as you get like the Daily Magician tapes, because it's kind of intro into kind of how we think. So obviously right now, feel free to go listen to the other tapes, or feel free to go do what Benji said, grab a book, you know, sit down, come up with some new concepts.
Yeah, I mean, maybe don't listen to this. You know, go listen to Freakonomics podcast. You know, think about how you can apply it to magic. Then maybe come back to this, because you got to get your dose of this as well. But that's the whole point. It's just thinking differently. That's what it's about. All right, gonna end this one here.